This is the Lindsay Lunn Show on Highland Radio, and you're very welcome to the third and final hour of the programme. Just want to mention that the annual Donegal Camino is taking place again this year to raise funds for Cancer Care West in Donegal, the office based in Letterkenny, but the service provided, of course, all over the county. Greg will be taking part in day two of the Camino. That's on next Monday week, the 2nd of September. And you're asked to please give what you can and support this great service in Donegal. You can do it on iDonate. Just search Greg's name on iDonate and you can donate there, or you can just call the station on 91 25,000, and one of the team will be able to help you with your payment. And thank you to everyone who has been supportive of Greg thus far. Now, delighted to welcome in to studio as part of the Your Voice, Your Community programme of events that have been on the show for the past number of months, Tolo Lupe Baba. I hope I've got that right. Do I? Tolo Lupe?
Absolutely right.
Excellent. Well, that's good. So, Tolo Lupe, you're very welcome to the programme.
You.
You're originally from Nigeria and you're a mental health professional.
Yeah.
And you're based in Ballandrate.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, obviously, there's a lot of conversation about mental health among the population, but you can offer a perspective on mental health that perhaps others can't. Tell us about the work you've been doing.
Okay, so first of all, thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited to be here and to talk about the things I've been doing so far. So majorly I've been working with immigrants for the past almost a year now, majorly to help with and talk about mental health in the sense of it.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of influx of immigrants at the moment, asylum seekers, refugees, even Ukrainians at some point,
yeah.
You know, and it's been really amazing to be able to reach out to majorly African descent asylum seekers and refugees, to be there as a mental health professional to support with the various phases they're going through at the
yes.
moment, you know, coming down to Ireland. Some didn't plan it, but they just found themselves here, fleeing for their lives, you know, with traumatic experiences from where they're coming from. And then getting here, you know, with the issues, various issues
yeah.
with asylum seekers at the moment, accommodation, getting
yeah.
jobs, and all of that. It piles up to it. And it's been wonderful being able to reach out to people in support groups of different communities. So, yeah.
And it works on two levels, and I'm going to get to the reaction and the issues here in a few moments. But first of all, something I think maybe we don't often put a lot of focus on. Let's talk about the fact that people who've come here seeking international protection, refugees,
mm-hmm.
they have wrenched themselves away from their community, which means they've wrenched themselves away from friends, from family, from support groups.
Oh, yeah.
They've come from the area they know
yeah.
into an area in which they're strange. There may be issues with language. Even if they're speaking English, the dialects and the pronunciations are going to be very, very different in Donegal
oh, yeah.
to the way they are. And I'm sure you will hear people talking in Donegal,
yeah.
and I'm sure you, Gwyn, and little Atoms of Wild Handling, you're welcome, sir. How's it going there? Hey. And you're going, okay, these are words. These are words in English. I can make out that they're words in English, but
mm-hmm.
I haven't a clue what they mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I came up here from Waterford and I struggled for the first
yeah.
6 months. I can't imagine what it's going to be like coming from somewhere like Nigeria
yeah.
just to get into the way people speak. So someone has, they've torn themselves away from their support structure at home.
Yeah.
They've come into the strange area
mm-hmm.
before we even get to issues like accommodation and the reactions of local community
okay.
and some of the political debates
absolutely.
And hysteria that's been going on
mm-hmm.
particularly recently. I mean, to wrench yourself away from your own home, as you say, sometimes it could be sudden. That
yeah.
must be a huge thing to deal with.
Oh, yeah. A huge thing. I remember getting here January last year. 2 weeks before coming here, I didn't know I was going to be here.
Mm.
And so I remember getting here, I would cry every day. You know, you left the comfort, the kind of like the very extremely comfortable life, having people sort out things for you, and then coming here into, it was really crazy. And I remember I would cry over and over, and, you know, I would apologize to my kids, and, you know, it was really difficult. And so, you know, I get what you're talking about, you know, leaving your comfort zone, leaving your luxury life, and having to come to a new place, starting all over again. It's a lot of things. Like, okay, so what am I going to do? Is Donegal okay? Is, you know, what other places are there in this country? How are things done? How can I get my, you know, some people have reached the highest level of their careers and had to leave it back because they had to flee for their lives. And, you know, coming here, you're starting all over again. You're leaving all the things you've built over the years, and then starting all over again. And like you said, the language as well. I remember at some point I would ask my kids, can you explain what to me what he's saying? Yeah. Because kids are more resilient, and, you know, they blend in faster than older ones.
And they're in school.
In school. And, you know, so it's a lot of change. It's a lot of change. And it's been a privilege working with people in different communities in Donegal so far.
You are a mental health professional with a background in psychotherapy, counselling. You're a highly qualified person. Your peers in this country who work in those services within the Irish HSE and the Irish health system, they would earn good money, and they would be held in high esteem in terms of their professionalism. But you can't, because your qualifications are, you know, there's going to be questions over the recognition of your qualifications, and you are volunteering at the moment. I mean, is there any pathway for you to actually use your skills and your profession in the Irish health system, working for the HSC or working as a professional? Or are you going to have to try and jump through hoops and get to a position where you can do so professionally?
Oh, well, I would say, first of all, I'm a psychologist, clinical psychologist, and I've been to also certified cognitive behavioral therapy, level 9. I had to, go back to school, kind of. When I got here. So in the span of a year and half, about that, I've been here. I've had to go in for some extra trainings and, you know, applied for some schools, because it's been pretty difficult to get a job with my certification. Even though my qualifications were recognized by PSI, that's the Psychological Society of Ireland. Mm. Immediately I got here, I send in my documentation and my certificates, and it was accredited, you know.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get the chartered accreditation yet, where I can kind of like have the license to work with people. And that's what I've been, one-on-one, and that's what I've been working towards. Based on school, I recently got admission for my PhD in Trinity College in Dublin, but I didn't get the funding for it. So I have to defer to next year. However, I've been working on my skill set with what I have on ground during facilitation, mental facilitation programs, and helping people in the community. So
now, you are yourself still an international protection applicant. So you're and you're still awaiting adjudication on your application.
Yeah.
Where do you stand in terms of then you being able to work? I mean, even if you were fully accredited, can you establish yourself in practice as an international protection applicant, or do you have to wait for acceptance of that application before you can actually fully work?
Okay. All thanks to DLDC. towards the end of last year, they discovered me and my community, and really helped so far. They helped me register my business name in Ireland. So even though I'm still under international protection, you know, that phase, I can still practice. I mean, not really practice, but I can register for my business, which I have done through DLDC. I could work with there is this access to labor market. We call it work permits.
Yeah.
You get that after like 6 months of getting into Ireland. I got, but it's been pretty difficult to get a job with my skill set. Like you said, you know, that's one of the issues I have. There's so many jobs I could get with what I have officially as a professional, but I couldn't because of there's so many barriers, majorly for, you know, I don't really want to talk about it on
of
air,
course,
but,
course,
you know, there's been a lot of barriers,
yes.
a lot. And so we're just making do with what I have now, and I'm not just letting go with my skill set. I've had to do some menial jobs in the past, despite the fact that I have the kind of qualifications I do. I've had to go to do literal jobs, and, you know, just to keep up, because my skill sets are not I'm not accepted to work based on so many, you know, reasons. Like I said, I really want to go on here about so.
The volunteering that you're doing, working with immigrants, working with people in the same boat as yourselves, looking for international protection, etc. What impact is the current discussion of the whole immigration issue having on them? Because I'm sure there are people watching their TV, they're looking at their TV, they're hearing some politicians saying we need to stop this, we need to send them home. Mm-hmm. We're looking at places like Coolock and fires in Coolock. We've also had fire. Let's be honest, we've also had fires here in Donegal. One of the first such fires happened in Donegal long before you ever arrived here.
Arrived.
I mean, it happened up in North Inishowen. I mean, and that was quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. So we've had incidents where there have been attacks on premises that people were coming to. Mm-hmm. We've had, and especially in cases where the perception is that a group of men is coming, there's a dialogue that's framed in such a way that seems to suggest that we almost assume that if there's a busload of men coming to move into an area, they're all going to be potential criminals and they need to be treated as such. That must be having an impact. From
Absolutely.
The point of view of the international protection community themselves, what's the perception as they look at it? They're not immune to this. They are hearing this and they're seeing this on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Now, we speak of Ireland of the Welcomes. I mean, what impact is it having on them to say, I came here for safety, but all I'm hearing is not welcome, not welcome, not welcome, not welcome.
Yeah. It's really crazy. I mean, I've had the community, the immigrant community is filled with so much fear, anxiety, and, you know, especially coupled with the issues going on around the anti-immigrants, also issues of waiting period. Like you said, waiting for the responses. We went for interview. You have to wait about a year plus to go for your interview. And then after your interview, you wait another maybe 8 months, 9 months to get your responses. And so within this period, a lot of people are so anxious because, you know, they don't know whether or not they would be refused or they would be approved to as a refugee. And this is really telling on a lot of people. And, you know, it's causing so much anxiety, so much fear, coupled with everything happening, insecurity. You know, some hostels, some accommodation centers have had to put up a lot of measures for security.
Yeah.
I remember, like you said, in Donegal recently, there was a video going around online about this person making videos in hostels and cooking up stories. I remember I was in Castlefin and hostels around that place, like Convoy, Rafoe, Lifford, Ballindrate, they were all apprehensive. They were all scared and, you know, they didn't know what to do. There was this tension all around.
Yeah.
And there was just this movement of requests to boost up the security in these places. So this has caused a lot of agitation among refugees and asylum seekers all around.
No, it is also important we acknowledge that there's organisations like, as you said, LYFS in Letterkenny, Finn Valley Family Resource Centre, there's the Intercultural Platform, there's groups all over that have the slogan Refugees Welcome. There are supports out there too, and there are supporters, and there are groups that are there to help, and there there to support, and that does need to be acknowledged. But yeah. But the negative, and sometimes in cases like this, unfortunately, human nature is to focus more on the negative than to focus on the positive.
Yeah, you know, not just in Ireland, many other countries as well. There's been a lot of refugees who have pushed the economy of countries, and, you know, bringing in your skill set, bringing in your professionalism, bringing in your experience. Like in my case, I'm not just helping asylum seekers professionally, but experientially. Like, this is what I'm going through. The first thing I tell the group, whatever I'm having a group support, is, you know what? I'm one of you.
Yeah.
We are equal in this group. Everybody. So be free to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. We're here. I'm just like you. And, you know, so I've been able to reach out experientially in spite of all, you know, has been going on. But like you said, we bring in so much positivity, so much value, so much beauty, and there's beauty in diversity, in inclusion, and the community has to see this. You know, stop this strife. I mean, the group of people, I'm talking about the anti-immigrants, you know, we are the people. The current issue in the UK, I worked a lady talking about how, you know, the immigrants are the ones doing the jobs that you, getting the skill set to do the kinds of jobs that you don't think you can kind of like get to do them. And we enjoy doing it. We're happy doing it. And we're boosting the economy. We're supporting, you know, jobs like healthcare assistants, job like support. You know, they enjoy it. We see value in it, you know, and we should be recognized for this and not turned down. So,
from your own point of view, Mindies is the name of the company, and you've registered the company, as you say, with the support of DLDC and others. Looking toward the future, from your own point of view, you will continue, obviously, working with immigrants, refugees, IPAs, and Ukrainians in certain cases too, in terms of boosting their mental health and trying to see them through what's going to be a very difficult period for themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, you're hoping, I presume, into the future that you'll get your own situation regularised and that you'll be able to throw yourself into your business and hopefully develop in Donegal and potentially for further afield as well?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I'm not, because, okay, so I don't know how best to put this, but one of the things we do in our support groups is, okay, so we do a vision board. And in a vision board, how do you see yourself in the next 2 years? How do you see yourself in the next 5 years? One of the things I tell people is be yourself. I see myself. In fact, most of the theses I've written, I've applied to like maybe almost 10 schools, both another master's in counseling and psychotherapy, clinical psychology, PhDs. My thesis for all the PhDs I've applied to is centered around refugees and asylum seekers and access to mental health. I wrote a piece that was published by Dublin University News. I published it last year, and it's centered around college students having access to counseling, you know, even as students. I've always, you know, found myself, I didn't plan this, but I found myself here. Like I said, I have experienced this and I've seen the need of my so-called people with the need for my skill set. And so I'm centered around, you know, in the next 5 years, I see myself having the full qualification to help people one-on-one, and in groups, and, you know, in various settings, supporting them. But however, I wouldn't say I'll be limited or be in Donegal, but, you know, it might be anywhere around Ireland, you know, but I'm still committed to mental health for asylum seekers. Having experienced what it is, having turned away from my settlement and seeing what this has been and how, you know, it has really impacted me negatively at some point before I crawled out of it and, you know, made up my mind, you know, this is where I found myself, and I really had to be resilient and kick things up. You know, I know that I can help other people that, you know, would find themselves in this situation and help them go through it and come out positively. You know.
Yeah, Tolulupe, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Tolulupe Babatunde, it's been a really interesting conversation. I hope people have got more understanding out of this and perhaps got better perspectives on what's happening. But thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
26 and a half minutes past 11 o'clock. Well, it's the day for esteemed guests in studio today because I have a clatter of them. We have three wonderful people in studio with us this morning. Just want to introduce you to them now. We have Shane Devlin, who's the captain of Buncrana Golf Club. Shane, good morning.
Good morning.
We have Margaret McAteer, secretary of the ladies' branch of Buncrana Golf Club. Margaret, good morning.
Good morning.
And we have a gentleman who is no stranger to us here on Highland Radio, the wonderful Pius McFadden. Pius, how are you?
How are you doing?
Ah, so we're grand. We're good. Flying. We're here to talk about, and people will potentially in Letterkenny Shopping Centre and many other venues around about the area will have seen a lovely new Hyundai i30 N-Line from Divers Hyundai in Letterkenny, in the shopping centre and elsewhere, with a big notice saying it can be yours if you take part in the Buncrana Golf Club draw, the Drive It Home car draw. Pius, you're one of the organisers. Tell us all about the draw and the car.
Well, the whole idea came up. It was mentioned a few years ago, committee. Mentioning car drawing. Then it sort of died a death. And I sort of brought it back to life and I've been helped with the captain and Martin and all their selling tickets along me. Mm-hmm. So one ticket is €25, three tickets is €50, and seven tickets you get €100.
Very good.
And we're just asking the people now to come out and support us now. We have one week to go. The draw is on the 31st of August. So all the help we can get from people supporting us will be very much appreciated.
Shane, talk to us about what this money will go toward. I mean, I'm sure it takes a lot to maintain a golf club and you want to keep your green fees and the prices to your members as low as possible. So bringing in regular funds and steady funds is always going to be important. Where is this money going to go?
The majority of it will go. We're in the middle of doing a clubhouse development. We're planning to do a new balcony. So the majority of the money hopefully will go towards that. And I suppose with the recent increase in costs and stuff, it's a lot more expensive to run everything. You have electricity, running costs for all the equipment out, diesel, even the parts for the whatever breaks down. So it's all going to go to a good home.
And Margaret, a lot of locals, well-known people from Buncrana and further afield have been pitching in and giving you a hand to get this promoted and get this organised.
Yeah, that it's great to see people that are well-known faces helping out with these, selling the tickets and that, because as Pius says, we can do it all the help we can get.
In terms of the ticket sales, Pius, how are things going? You and I happened to have a conversation at the shopping centre last weekend. I was just in there doing a bit of shopping and we had the crack while you were there. I mean, things are going well?
Things are going not so bad. Don't know, I would love to see them going a lot better. But
And you say there is still a week to go?
Still a week to go. So I'm just asking the people to come out and support us.
And the draw is on this Saturday week.
Week, the 31st, and O'Flaherty's Spa. I'd like to thank O'Flaherty's actually for giving us the use of their premises for to hold the draw. And there's a gig going there as well that night, and it's all free to everybody. Mm-hmm. So the draw is at 8 p.m. Saturday, 8 p.m. on O'Flaherty's Bar. And the MC for the night will be John McCarter, a very famous man in Buncrana.
Everyone knows John, God bless him.
Everybody knows John.
And there is a website as well. As we say, there are tickets on sale in various locations. And we might actually, before we go to the website, we'll hit the locations first. I say there's been sort of pop-up stalls in places like the shopping centre. Where else are tickets available? Philip?
Sorry, Pius, if you're in there.
We'll go back to Pius.
We're actually in Super Valley Buncrana tomorrow. Uh-huh. We're in Cost Cutters Cairn Donagh on Saturday. And Sunday, the car will be at O'Flaherty's Bar outside on the main street in Buncrana. And all week, basically, she'll be based in Buncrana. And Friday week, the car will be at Simpson's Supermarket in Carndonagh again. And then Saturday the 31st, the day of the draw, the car will be outside O'Flaherty's Bar again. And that night, the car will be round in out the back, as they call it, O'Flaherty's.
Yeah, and the name you've given this is the Drive It Home Draw. The idea being, person wins the car, and if the person's in the bar, you give them the keys and away they go?
No. We just
can't. Oh, we can't drive it home. We'll call it the Drive It Home Draw, but you can't drive it home.
The car is the first prize, and then Divers Hyundai will take the car, do whatever they have to do to clean up the car and all, and the person will be registered
the registration
for the person.
And all that, So it's, in terms of the website, Philip, the Drive It Home draw, people can buy their tickets online as well if they're not around the various shops.
Yeah, if you just go on your phone or your laptop or whatever, www.driveithomedraw.ie, that'll take you right in, and the website's very easy to work, so you have your options to buy your tickets and go through with it from there.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure club members are probably selling tickets as well. I mean, a lot of people will know club members in and around about Buncrana town. I'm sure there's probably some places just have tickets in there, some of the shops and venues around about Buncrana too, who would have tickets locally, and there's
as well
signposted.
There's a couple of the bars, Flaherty's Bar there, have them in stock, and any committee member, or even if you just want to call in the golf club, all help would be greatly appreciated, because it's going to a good cause, because the better facilities that we have down the golf club, it's to benefit the community as well. So,
and Margaret, going back to yourself, in terms of, I mean, the challenge of running a golf club on a day-to-day basis, I suppose we're at the point now where both members and visitors demand a certain level of comfort, particularly in the clubhouse. They demand certain facilities. They demand the levels that they're seeing elsewhere, and you've got to make sure that Buncrana keeps up with everybody else.
Well, Buncrana is probably a bit different from other golf clubs, that it's more a community-based golf club. So certainly, as with the women, we have a kitchen and facilities for tea and that. So anybody is, if you're a visitor or even any of the members, there's always tea and a kettle on the boil and whatever. I would feel it's more a community place than an actual golf club, because we don't have a bar and things like that in it. But definitely there's plenty of facilities for anybody that comes.
But do you still offer, if someone is visiting the area, if there are tourists and they ask, you know, where can I play around the golf, I presume they're still welcome?
Oh, they would, yeah. We would get a lot of players that are staying in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel, and they can play there in our club as well. So you would meet lots of people that would come to play from that. So definitely anybody can come and play.
And I presume too, given the proximity, Philip, the proximity of Buncrana to the border and Derry in particular, I'm sure a lot of people are coming across from Derry to play.
Oh, there is, sure. You look at it, it's only a 15-mile drive from the border. So, yeah, there's a lot of visitors, especially in the summer months, coming. They're coming on a wee vacation for a couple of days, nip down and play their 9 or 18 holes, whatever.
Pius, as you said, this all started with you making a suggestion a few years ago, and then it got resurrected. I'm sure you're one of the busiest men in the county at the moment. Do you ever get up in the morning and think, God, I should have kept my mouth shut?
Sometimes, don't sometimes. But no, that guy. As Margaret says, we are a community club, and, you know, sometimes the crack is fantastic down there. But you're imagining people coming in, and we hire out clubs as well, like for people that comes, maybe they've forgot their golf clubs or something like that. We would sort them out with golf clubs as well. But to get back to the car draw, that's the main thing. I'm just here now today.
And no better than that.
We get people to buy tickets and won this car. Or, plus, we have 5,000, 3,000, 2,000 and 1,000 euro as well. But there's 4 other prizes as well as the car. So just people come out, buy the tickets, call to the club, Francie and Gary will sort yours out if you call to the club. Or buy it online, driveithomedraw.ie.
Pius McFadden, Shane Devlin and Margaret McAteer, thank you all very much indeed. And people are well aware of it now, so hopefully we'll see that little spike in ticket sales in the next couple of days, particularly over the weekend. And may it be a huge success, and may the golf club in Buncrana continue to be a shining light in the community. But for the moment, all three of you, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We had a comment earlier on about the school buses in the area of Kilmacrenan, picking people up in Kilmacrenan and dropping them off at the secondary school an hour before the classes start. Caller just says, look, in relation to that school bus going to Milford, all those buses have to do national school runs as well, so the buses are fairly busy. Another caller says, listening to John about Sligo, we have an 84-year-old neighbour who has to go to Sligo. He was quoted €200 each way by a number of taxis. It would be extra dependent depending on the time he was in the hospital. This is so unfair for people who don't have anything but their pension. We took him to Sligo. He insisted on paying. We took the cost of the petrol. Donegal had this facility some time ago, and it's time it was back. Another caller says, so many going for that injection here in Inishowen. They have to leave so early for the appointment. Surely they could have a clinic for one day in Letterkenny. And it's a macular degeneration condition is the condition that's being treated here. Another caller, and this is an issue that we hear of all too often. I'm on day 13 in the Bomini area of no water in Letterkenny. It'll come on at 2 p.m. and go off again at about 7, but it's extremely low pressure, which you can do very little with. What can be done about this? Now, I know a number of councillors, Donal Mandy Kelly in particular, but others as well, have been constantly pushing Irish Water on this, and it's an ongoing and regular point of conversation within the chamber of Donegal County Council. But what the councillors and the council officials will tell you is this ultimately is a matter for Irish Water. Irish Water are telling us they are planning a improvement scheme that will be starting shortly. However, they don't have a timeline, and in the interim, I know Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly is proposing that there should be immediate emergency work done at the boreholes in Letterkenny to just improve the pressure and improve supply in the short term before a fully comprehensive new job is done. But it is under regular discussion, and we'll put that out to councillors and to Irish Water as well. Please note, people in Bomini are asking questions. Now, I want to go to line two, because the Glebe House and Gallery has confirmed that is to close to the public for a period beginning on September 2nd to facilitate some major works, joined by the curator, Adrian Kelly. Adrian, good morning.
Hi, Donald, how are you?
Very well indeed, thanks. Adrian, tell us about this work that's being done, because it seems to be a very comprehensive programme that's ahead.
It is, yeah. It's we've had a number of surveys carried out into the condition of the house. So we thought the house was 200 years old, and it appears that some of it might be a bit older than that again. And it's this older part of the house that is giving us a lot of bother. It's a problem with damp. So essentially, in the sometime after the 1920s, but before Derek Hill bought the house in the 50s, the house was painted with emulsion. So it was weatherproof. People thought that was the thing to do. And of course, that sealed, these buildings were supposed to be able to breathe, and that sealed them. And then at some point, you know, between then and the 80s, it was rendered with concrete, again, weatherproofing it and sealing it. So it keeps the rain out, but it keeps the damp in, so the dampness builds up on the walls. And we've known for a long time that the only way to remedy this is to remove the concrete sealed render and to replace it with an old lime-based render. But it's a huge job. And then we have to tackle the work to the inside of the house. The damp patches to the inside of the house, which are extensive, really. You know, you wouldn't, until you go looking, you wouldn't notice them, and you know that's the way I would like it. But we are looking, and we have noticed them.
So the reality of it is now, and people would have ordinarily looked forward to being able to go to the Glebe House and Gallery maybe around about Easter time. That's not going to happen. We're now talking as of the 2nd of September and the closure. Then we're really talking summer of next year before the house and gallery open again.
The house and gallery, yeah. So we're doing. As I say, the first thing we have to do is remove the collection from the house, and that'll take us a month. So that's what September's for, is to get everything packed and moved. Do you know, and I mean, most museum professionals would hope to get through their whole career without ever moving a whole collection.
Yeah.
I nearly made it, but I haven't.
Yeah.
I have to do it. So it's an enormous, a very nerve-wracking piece of work. It'll take a month. and then the building work can start. They're going to remove the old render, and then they have to leave the building to dry for a number of months. It'll be wrapped, you know, so the rain won't get in, but yeah. it has to be able to, the moisture that's in the walls has to get out, you know, in both directions. And then it has to be re-rendered, and the re-rendering has to happen when it's warm enough. So we have to, it's not particularly weather dependent, but it is dependent on the temperature.
Yeah.
If we have a very late spring, that's going to be a problem.
So we're talking probably minimum April, May next year, minimum, and possibly into June.
We're planning to open in June. That's what our plan is. And we think that's given us room for the thing to crawl a wee bit. You know, we've built that in. That's, if you know, the we're kind of hoping that's the worst possible date. Now, we would normally open for Easter, obviously, but that Easter open art competition is a big beast of a thing to organise. It takes about 2 months beforehand. We need about 2 months to organise it. There's so much involved. Yeah. So we would really need to be starting that sort of middle of January, February. That's not possible. So, and the reason it's not possible is because when we take the collection out of the Glebe House, we're going to store it in the gallery.
Yeah.
So we've lost the gallery for that whole period. It's much safer than trying to store it, you know, in probably Dublin.
You'd be of course. Yeah.
Space in Dublin and moving it that distance. So much more dangerous than just moving it to the gallery. I mean, it's dangerous enough moving it to the gallery, but at least we have, you know, our security and our climate controls and our environmental controls. You know, I can look after that.
And obviously the gallery itself is a later addition to the site, and that isn't affected by these problems.
It's not. No, the gallery is as old as the house. It was built in the 1820s as well. So it's as old as that, but it's in good shape. We've done a lot of work.
All right. Yeah.
So far, I mean, we've identified a lot of problems and have been, you know, very quietly working away at them over the years, and we can do that over the winter period, and it doesn't often affect, you know, I mean, if it's done properly, you're not aware it's ever happened. But this is just a bigger job. It's a much bigger job. But we want to take advantage of it. So the reason the whole entire site is closing is because we need to drain the lawns down near the lake. They're low-lying and they're very wet. So when all the other work's going on and the gallery's going to be closed anyway and the building work's going to be very rough-looking at the start, we decided we would close the whole site and try and drain that lower area ourselves and just take advantage, you know, just take the hit all at once.
You're hoping the grounds.
I mean, it's really exciting. It's a really exciting piece of work. It's a very necessary piece of work. Yeah. As I say, we thought the house was built in 1828, and the former words that we took that from was that it was built on an existing site. So we presumed that it replaced an earlier building, but it seems now one of the studies that we had carried out a few years ago is telling us that sort of 2/3 of the house was probably retained. It's maybe 100 years older, and it's that bit that we have the damp problem with. So as well as doing, it's not just the render on the outside and the damp patches on the inside. We then have to get the water off the roof. The gutters were obviously designed for a much smaller house. That seems obvious now to us. So we need to replace the gutters with ones that will manage the volume of water that's coming off the roof.
And I presume because it's an old house, because it's a heritage house, you can't just slap on a big, huge plastic gutter. What you do has got to be very much in keeping with the character of the house, and you're going to be very much limited in terms of what you can do and what you can put up there.
We would limit ourselves anyway, you know, so we would hope to work to very high standards, but we'll be replacing like with like. We'll be replicating anything that we can't, you know, conserve and restore. And then we have to drain around the house, so that the surface water gets away from the house, because, you know, there was no real drainage.
Yeah.
I mean, we have an old septic tank that Derek Hill put in. He put plumbing, and before that, the rainwater just ran into the ground around the building. There would have been no, you know, hard surfaces around the building, so it drained away itself. And because the buildings could breathe, the damp didn't, you know, it didn't rise inside the buildings. Whereas now we have a couple areas that are quite bad inside the house. They look okay because we maintain them, but we want to really fix it, you know, fix the building and give it another couple of hundred years.
Absolutely.
So, and it shows amazing confidence, you know, in the site that we're, you know, we're looking that far ahead. We're not just looking, you know, 15 or 20 or 50 years ahead, but looking ahead a couple of hundred years, yeah.
In terms of the grounds, you're hoping the grounds will reopen perhaps January of next year, and that's potentially important because I had the pleasure of being there when that new outdoor classroom area was opened by the minister a while back. And I mean, that's a fantastic addition to what's in the grounds. And the grounds of the Dlieb Gallery in themselves are an absolutely amazing place to visit and perhaps don't get the attention they deserve.
Well, the grounds are probably the most visited thing, actually, you know, to be honest about it. I don't think people would come if the house and the gallery weren't here, but a lot of our repeat visitors are just coming to be outside. And we're hoping to, you know, with these things, they do crawl. We wouldn't be draining them if they were dry, obviously.
Yeah.
And we've had a very damp summer, so it's going to be hard to work there. So we're hoping that we'll get a bit of luck and be able to drain them and have most of the grounds open by January. Now, we won't have all of the grounds open because the works to the house, there's a separate drainage scheme from that. So half of the garden's going to be closed until July or June, yeah, rather. But we're hoping to open most of the gardens in January. But again, the drainage work is weather permitting, and it's some of the gardens are at the same level as the lake when the lake's full, and the lake hasn't really emptied this summer like it normally would. So they had, you know, they're really spongy, they're very marshy.
Yeah.
And we would hope to do it. We'll never be able to have that area dry underfoot during the winter because it is just at the lake level. But during the summer when the lake level falls, we would hope that ground would dry out and that area would be, so, you know, with the proper drainage, it would be solid enough that we could do things down there then, you know, events and make more use of it. People make a lot of use of it anyway, but we'd like to make more use of it. We would hope to increase our numbers, you know, quite significantly in the coming years. And that this work to the house is kind of the last of the things we have to do before we can look forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the last of the sort of the backroom stuff that just has to be done before you can say what we have is perfect.
Well, we look forward to the next phase of what's happening in Dlieb House and Gallery, and it's a fantastic facility. I've had the pleasure of being there for various reasons on a number of occasions in recent years, and I look forward to doing so again. And thanks for speaking to us, Adrian.
And Donal, we're going to be doing a lot of social media around this. We're going to be, you know, talking to the various. We're going to have some really interesting conservators and, you know, tradesmen working on this, tradespeople working on this, rather. We'll be doing lots of social media. If people keep an eye on the Facebook and the Instagram, you know, things will be popping up. We'll keep people informed of our progress and sort of the timelines when we know better. And we don't like being closed.
Of course,
we would rather be open every day of the year if we could. So, you know, you can rest assured we'll be open as soon as we can.
In the meantime, Adrian, thank you very much indeed. It's the Lindsay Lynn Show.
Donald, thanks for having me on.
Okay,
thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
We were speaking earlier about the eye injection for macular degeneration that's provided in Sligo. We're joined on the line by Eamon from RFO. Eamon, good morning.
Good morning. Donald, how are you?
Very well indeed. Eamon, you regularly have to go to Sligo for these injections.
Well, we were just up there yesterday. You have to have an accompanied driver with you because you're not allowed to drive back again. And we met several people there from Donegal, some of them elderly, and some of them from Inishowen, and some of them from Gidore and Dunlow. Yeah. And that seems an awful journey.
Absolutely. And you did raise the question about having this service provided in Letterkenny.
Yeah. I asked the question yesterday. I am diabetic, and I heard from other people that they are treating diabetics in Letterkenny for this. But it turned out, anyway, when I talked to the doctor, I have a different condition called AMD, macular degeneration.
That's advanced macular degeneration, yeah.
Yeah, and he explained to me that my diabetes isn't affecting my sight.
Yeah.
And that the problem that I have, they are not dealing with that in Letterkenny at the minute. But he did say that there's a possibility that it will happen later in the year. And it would save a lot of people an awful lot of...
It certainly would.
And particularly,
as you say, you can't drive afterwards. So it's not just a matter of you going, you have to bring somebody with you. And
I met a man one day that I knew, and he had 72 injections got. And I met another man, from outside Donegal town, and he has over 40. And that's an awful lot of travelling.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I was talking to Greg Hughes about this problem a few years back. The former councillor Ian McGarvey had been on Highland Radio, and I talked to Greg then a few days later, and nothing has happened, you know.
Yeah. So. And I mean, I do know Ian McGarvey did raise it, and others have raised it as well, particularly in the context of the Regional Health Forum West, which it's been discussed at that as well. And we regularly have discussions about the need to travel to both Sligo and Galway for various appointments and procedures and so on and so forth. But certainly if this is to be potentially available in Letterkenny, that would be very good news.
The people in Sligo are doing great work, and they're very good people. And
indeed,
it's just a pity that the same facility can't be availed of in Letterkenny, you know.
Well, hopefully that'll change. Eamon, listen, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us and just for giving us that update. And perhaps you've managed to give us a bit of hope as well. That's Eamon there, who was in that clinic in Sligo just yesterday. A clinic, I must say, I am familiar with myself, and I have been there myself for my own purposes. And it is, as he said, it's a great service provided there, as is the service provided in Letterkenny. It would just be great to see these procedures available more in Letterkenny. And that's it for today's 9 till noon show. Thank you to all our contributors. Thank you to all who appeared on the programme this morning. Thanks especially to Shannon and to Caroline for taking the calls, and Caroline for producing. Most importantly, thanks to you for listening and for sharing your views and for keeping in contact with the programme and keeping us on our toes. We're back tomorrow with, of course, the Friday panel and the entertainment hour and all that goes with a Friday. But for now, for myself, Donal Kavanagh, John Breslin's up next around the Northwest. Have a great day.